This is Poetry Off the Shelf for the Poetry Foundation, March 11th, 2015. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, what does snow have to do with race?
One must have a mind of winter to regard the frost and the boughs of the pine trees crusted with snow.
That's the actor Michael Stuhlbarg reading The Snowman by Wallace Stevens, one of the great snow poems in the language. One must have a mind of winter.
And have been cold a long time to behold the junipers shagged with ice, the spruces rough in the distant glitter of the January sun.
Forgive me, Wallace Stevens, but in the Northeast this year, one must have a mind of winter just to get through it.
And not to think of any misery in the sound of the wind, in the sound of a few leaves, which is the sound of the land, full of the same wind that is blowing in the same bare place for the listener who listens in the snow and nothing himself beholds, nothing that is not there and the nothing that is.
By now, everyone in New England must have minds of winter. Just recently, they had 7 feet of snow on the ground. The poet and critic Stephen Burt teaches at Harvard and lives near Boston. And this winter, his mind turned to snow in American poetry. He wrote an entertaining essay about it that's up on our website. When he was snowed in a few weeks ago, I called him to talk about one of the poems he gets into in his essay, not The Snowman, which he only mentions in passing, but a poem by Terence Hayes called Snow for Wallace Stevens. I asked him to tell us a bit about Terence Hayes and what he was going after in his snow poem.
Well, Terence Hayes is a poet who came of age in the 90s and the 2000s after the very contentious debates between camps of black poets in the 60s and 70s were mostly over between, let's say, Robert Hayden on the one hand and, who's a good example, Amiri Baraka on the other, about whether black poets need to sound black all the time and draw only on black traditions, or whether it's okay and it's authentic to be an African-American poet who is not only familiar with, but indebted to European forms.
Mm-hmm.
So what you see in reading Terence Hayes is that he has a number of poems, and we're going to talk about one of them, where he's figuring out, and he's almost telling other writers, and especially maybe younger non-white writers, he's saying, here's how we can use this stuff that was invented, in some instances, by racists or by people who sound racist. And Wallace Stevens, in Conversation and in some of his poems, used racist language. Hayes is saying, how can I show that this technique matters to me? How can I show that this tradition belongs to me when it is so strongly associated with practices and beliefs and attitudes that exclude me?
Hmm.
One way to say, no, this technique wasn't invented for me or by people who look like me, but it is mine, is to respond directly to the poet who's part of a technique that you want to use. And that's what Hayes is doing in this poem. It is a response both to Wallace Stevens' poem, The Snowman, and to some of Stevens's other poems that have been important to Hayes, sometimes despite and sometimes because they connect Stevens to invidious ways that white people have thought about race.
So he read the poem in 2008 at Virginia Commonwealth University.
That's right.
And here's what he said by way of introduction. He's not responding to A Snowman, he says. He's responding to this.
This is the poem that kind of it riffs off of, Decorations in a Nigger Cemetery. Obviously, when I saw the title of the poem, I had to write a poem for Wallace Stevens, so that sort of is in the backdrop of the poem.
He says that it was sparked by encountering Stevens' long poem with its racist title, but the poem itself refers to a number of poems by Wallace Stevens, some of which are more famous than others. I believe his poem, The Glass of Water, is quoted, for example, and the Stevens poem, A High-Toned Old Christian Woman, is quoted. It's really a response to the legacy of Stevens in general, and it's a poem very much in line with what some other poets and critics have said about Stevens. which is that Stevens's sense of himself as a winter writer, as someone who was sort of snowed in, the same things that gave him some of his tremendous verbal inventiveness also helped blind him, or snowblind him, if you like, to the real-world implications of his racial attitudes and his sometimes racist language.
Well, let's give it a listen. This recording of Terence Hayes can be found on the website of Blackbird, an online journal of literature and the arts put out by the English department at Virginia Commonwealth University.
Snow for Wallace Stevens. No one living a snowed-in life can sleep without a blindfold. Light is the lion that comes down to drink. I know tink and tank and tunk-a-tunk-tunk hold nearly the same sound as a bottle. Drink and drank and drunk-a-drunk-drunk. Light is the lion that comes down. This song is for the wise man who avenges by building his city in snow. I know what he said about the decorations over the graves of our dead, nigger. How, with pipes of winter lining his cognition, does someone learn how to bring a sentence to its knees? Who is not more than his limitations? Who is not the blood in a wine barrel and molten glass pressed into a mold as well? The man who invented moonshine slept on the bank of a frozen river the night before. I, too, having lost faith in language, have placed my faith in language. Thus, I have a capacity for love without forgiveness. This song is for my foe, the clean-shaven, gray-suited, gray patron of Hartford, the emperor of whiteness, blue as a body made of snow.
That's very strongly worded there at the end. This song is for my foe. Does he really see him as an enemy, his foe?
Yes and no. Hmm. Stevens is someone who Hayes here wishes, I think, to defeat. But a foe can also be someone whose talent you respect, someone from whom you learn, someone you do not wish to obliterate. And the more I look at it, the more I see it as a diagnosis and a tribute.
Who is not more than his limitations?
That is a terrific thing, not just for Hayes to say about Stevens, but for really any of us to say about any really morally problematic writerly forebear, mm-hmm. which is most writerly forebears. You can look at almost any widely influential and admired poet from the past and find something wrong with them by today's ethical standards.
Yeah.
There are exceptions. I think Marianne Moore voted for Herbert Hoover. That was about the worst thing she did. But you can't found your poetics just on Marianne Moore. I mean, you can, but that would be unusual. It would be good for the future of poetry to have all the resources that it can have. And that means recognizing what the great poets of the past did and said and thought that was blinkered or limited or morally wrong, and then saying, hey, this guy has more than his limitations. But it also means if I'm going to use this person's techniques, if I'm going to say, this tradition belongs to me, this work from the past belongs to me, I do have to have a kind of adversarial relationship with him, at least part of the time. This poem gains if you see Hayes' relationship to Stevens, not in terms of wanting to obliterate and conquer and destroy his foe, but in terms of wanting to understand and to overcome him, to say, now I know more than he knew.
And he has this wonderful line,
thus I have a capacity for love without forgiveness.
Exactly. You don't have to forgive Stevens for his occasional racist language. You don't have to dismiss that or ignore it in order to love the poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And you also don't have to forgive your mean relatives for being mean in order to love them. That capacity for love without forgiveness is something it would be good to have or develop outside of literary studies as well.
Right. So snow is white, And for an African-American poet, that's got to be sort of irresistible on a metaphorical level. What's he doing with that in this poem, do you think?
He's doing a lot with it. The critique of Wallace Stevens as living a snowed-in life, as walling himself off
right.
from other people's experience as a flaw in his great poetry and as an explanation for his attitudes, is something that Hayes is not the first to diagnose. Adrian Rich has written about Wallace Stevens and said pretty much the same thing. The critique of the author of The Snowman as snowed in and blindfolded is where we begin.
Mm-hmm.
And the more Stevens you know, the more Stevens you can see percolating or resonating throughout Hayes's poem. And a lot of that Stevens has to do with snow and winter and New England and cold and emotional chilliness. Stevens sometimes associated himself with winter, with Connecticut and New England as cold places, as places that didn't have a lot of human contact, a lot of warmth. And that resonates throughout the poem. By the end, the whiteness of snow becomes explicit. It's a joke both about Stevens as the author of The Snowman, and the snowman in Stevens's poem is someone who becomes unfeeling and inhuman in order to understand the incomprehensibility of mindless nature, the nothing that is not there and the nothing that is. The Stevens of whiteness at the end of the poem, a whiteness that for Hayes is partly white supremacy, is the author of The Snowman. He's also the author of the poem The Emperor of Ice Cream.
Mm-hmm.
And ice cream doesn't have to be white, but it often is.
This song is for my foe, the clean-shaven, gray-suited, gray patron of Hartford, the emperor of whiteness, blue as a body made of snow.
Stevens thinks that he is the poet of snow and winter and whiteness, and he is. But he's also a poet of grayness, of gray-suitedness, of white-collar life, of people whose jobs involve numbers and words in Hartford,
mm-hmm.
where Stevens worked and lived.
Mm-hmm.
And Hayes says at the end of this poem, I know two things about Stevens and Stevens's America that Stevens seems not to know. One is that Stevens has a body, and we all have bodies, and we write out of our bodies. And the other is that that body, like every American body, is informed by traditions that are not only white, that are also black, and that also bring in the blues.
Blue as a body made of snow.
It's not really true that Stevens imagines an all-white America. It's not really true that Stevens erases black art and black influence throughout his poetry. That's not true. But what is true is that Hayes reacts to a number of Stevens' most famous and a number of Stevens' most resonant poems and finds in those poems a kind of erasure of black voices and black experience. And Hayes says, you know, I am in a post-Stevensian literary America. I come after him. I read him. In some ways, he's my foe because some of his poems do reflect white supremacy, and I'm going to talk back to that even while I pay this very complicated tribute to his art. And this poem is a model not just of how to write about literary snow in America, but of how to respond to the mixed feelings that one poet can have about an important and a skillful forebear whose personality is antithetical.
Stephen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You can read Stephen Burt's essay on snow and American poetry on our website, where you can also find some of his poems and many more essays. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.